Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Ask a Lawyer, a production of the Institute for Native Arts and Media. This episode is brought to you by Oklahoma Indian Legal Services, serving Indian country in Oklahoma for 40 years. Today with me is Executive Director of OIL, Stephanie Hudson. How are you today?
I'm great. Great.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions. It's been a second since I've been able to talk to you personally, but I gotta know, what is up with the Supreme Court? It seems like there are so many different things coming out now that Roe's been overturned. Now ICWA's in front of them. What else? There are so many other issues that are going to directly affect us here.
Yeah, the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, the justices decide which cases they're going to accept and which ones they don't want to accept. You know, to hear cases that involve federal law. That's, you know, what their jurisdiction is to talk about things that involve federal law. They also hear, you know, state versus state controversies and stuff, but their primary area is listening to federal law. And some of the things that they've been hearing lately are, you know, of course, the abortion case, determine whether there's a right for women to make choices about their own bodies and stuff. So, you know, that's been in the news. We've seen cases on federal Indian law, because Indian law in general, those are federal laws, the Indian Child Welfare Act, jurisdictional issues involving federal Indian land. Those are federal issues. We're also seeing some issues involving gerrymandering of voting districts where one party or the other tries to fix how districts are set up and who is going to be the predominant party who may vote in that area. So there's questions about, you know, how those voting districts are set up. And one that's been before the Supreme Court this week, which just kind of blew my mind when I started reading about it, is there protection at a federal level for people who have businesses and the customers that they can serve? So I think a lot of us have seen the case, you know, several years ago with the baker who in Colorado who made wedding cakes, and a gay couple came in and wanted a cake made for them. And the baker felt that, well, I don't have to make you a cake. That doesn't follow my religious preference. And so it went all the way to the Supreme Court about, you know, whether they had to bake a cake for a gay couple or not. So now we have a case before the Supreme Court where it's a web designer, and a web designer is saying, well, I design web pages, and I am sure that a gay couple is going to come to me and ask me to make a website that deals with gay issues, or just the fact that they're gay and I don't want to help them. So that's the case before the Supreme Court right now, which, you know, I find, you know, rather ridiculous in this day of age to believe that you can't serve a LGBTQ person just based upon their sexuality. That, you know, that's just wrong, I think, to think
but
that.
But isn't that, I mean, when we're talking about discrimination, because that's what this is. This is being able to legally discriminate against people you don't like. And you know, bringing religion into it, that is, to me, that is such a slippery slope. And keep in mind, just like you said, nobody's actually asked her to build a website. No gay person has even asked her to design a website. she just is trying to do like this preemptive, like setting precedent. Mm-hmm. And to say, nope, this went to the Supreme Court and nobody has to serve gay people if they don't want to.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And this is nothing new. This is actually what this is doing, is rolling back all of these different federal protections that have been in place, that LGBTQ plus people have fought for, that women have fought for, that natives have fought for. Mm-hmm. Basically what this is doing is rolling all of that back. And making sure that, you know, if these rules are going to be changed, we're going to have to wait until the Supreme Court has all new nominees. And that could be 20, 30 years.
A whole new generation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got these cases that are really address society, address these big societal issues. And what my concern was with this particular argument, I read some information, I read some stories about what happened at this particular argument. So I tried to go back and look a little bit closer at what was being said in this argument. And I guess there were some hypotheticals. You know, in law, we do that a lot. We do that a lot when we're trying to analyze something or we're trying to make an argument. We use hypotheticals in order to determine if this is what we're arguing, then could this possibly happen, or could this possibly happen? So that's what judges do a lot, is they try to think about these hypotheticals and what could be the result of the decisions that they're making. So one of the hypotheticals that Judge Alito threw out in this case involving the web designer who didn't want to provide services to LGBTQ customers was, he said, well, you know, suppose that we're in a mall, and suppose that there's a Black Santa. And the Black Santa has some Ku Klux Klan children come up. Does the Black Santa, and he said it while he was laughing, does the Black Santa have to serve the Ku Klux Klan children? Okay, regardless of, you know, what the hypothetical is and what the result of the hypothetical is, just the fact that we have a Supreme Court justice who is laughing while he's making hypotheticals involving a Black Santa and Ku Klux Klan children bothers me. That, you know, if it was, you know, a serious discussion about discrimination, which this is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a serious discussion about discrimination, but to take problems that different communities are experiencing and discrimination that communities are experiencing, and to kind of make light of it in a kind of joking way, worries me, because we have these very big cases in front of the Supreme Court that they have selected to take. And it, you know, these involve rights of Indian children. These involve rights of LGBTQ communities. This involves whether certain communities have the voice that other communities have when they're voting. There's these big societal cases coming up, and then to have a Supreme Court justice who just makes light of some of the things, it's disturbing.
Okay, so Justice Alito, that dude, to say how the kids said, that dude's wilding out.
Yeah.
The things that he has said all the way around. I am an avid C-SPAN watcher. Mm-hmm. That's how big of a nerd I am. I love C-SPAN. I love it. Because it's very raw. All it is a camera feed, right? That's all C-SPAN is a camera feed. Oh. And they decide where they're going to turn it on. And you see these different politicians, these different leaders, these Supreme Court justices go when they're promoting their books, when they're getting honored by these different organizations, the Heritage Foundation and things like that. And they go and they give their acceptance speeches. And Justice Alito, like, I've been worried about that dude since day one. But now, I mean, there's certainly been, since the Trump administration and the way that he sat his justices and their, except for Neil Gorsuch, their whole lack of experience, Judge Alito is the one that really has worried me all along. And now that he is one of the older, more senior justices, I'm sure that he has a lot of pull, he and Clarence Thomas, and that scares me. I can't even tell you. Yeah. Like, that's the stuff nightmares are made of, to think about Clarence Thomas being actually in control of any kind of docket or emergency hearings like Trump asked him to be a part of. And it's like I said, the language that's used, you're right, it's like KKK children, like, we're automatically accepting. There's so much wrong with that, like, and the notion of understanding that, hey, people are out there being raised to be racist, so what are you gonna do about it, kind of, well, you know, kind of jokingly, jokingly. It's just in bad taste.
Yeah, it's in bad taste, and it tells you what their mindset is when they are deliberating on these cases that, like I said, you know, big societal issues that are important to many communities. Communities that are slowly becoming the majority.
Okay, so I'm glad that you said that, because with Justice Alito and the misogynistic and, let's say it, racist things that he says, I mean, is this the last poll? Is this the last battle, so to speak, before whites are not the majority anymore? Do you know what I mean? Like, because we have people of color running on all levels. We have federal judges of color. We've got, I mean, people of color, we're coming up, because there's so many of us, right?
Well, and the House Minority Leader is, what's his name? He's taken Nancy Pelosi's place.
Oh, Hakeem Jeffries.
Yeah, Hakeem Jeffries. But he's the first Black House Minority Leader
ever.
And he would be Speaker of the House if the Democrats had won the House. So you're right. There are more people of color who are becoming, have more prominent roles. You know, we've got Ketanji Jackson, who is the newest Supreme Court justice. And, you know, and that's another thing that, stepping back just a second, is another thing that Alito did in this argument yesterday was he alluded to, I think it was Justice Sotomayor's, or was it Justice Kagan? He alluded to them using dating sites inappropriately. And it was just in a way that was done in bad taste. So, you know, on one hand, he's making these jokes about Black Santas and Ku Klux Klan children, but then he skips over and laughingly says something about one of the female justices using dating sites and discussing that in open court.
How's that not harassment? And Clarence Thomas, like I want to scream, like I feel like my head's gonna explode.
And how our listeners may be going, well, you know, how is this all relevant to the law and such? And why are we discussing this? And is this just, you know, gossip or whatever? You know, I think it goes back to what you're just saying, is that we do have people of color, communities of color that are becoming a larger percentage of the population. So we've just seen these more, I guess, you know, we all think we live in a polite society and we all kind of keep our mouth shut and, you know, don't be rude and stuff like that. But to me, you know, we're seeing more and more, and it's not just rude, we're seeing more and more people feeling like they have the right to say racist comments, sexist comments, homophobic comments, and to see it expressed orally from the Supreme Court during oral arguments, to see it said outright is disturbing. And I wonder if it is, you know, it makes me wonder, is this the way that a population who fears that they are losing power is trying to keep some of that power by degrading other communities and other populations?
You know, and there's, like, as a policy wonk too, I totally see what you're saying, but this does matter. This matters, and especially as far as the law goes, these are the nine people who will determine how you yourself are able to conduct yourself in court, the way that our attorneys are able to protect our rights, the way that our attorneys are able to advocate for us, for organizations, the guidelines that are used when determining what you can and can't do when you're an American citizen, like, oh, there's a law, you can't do that. So now I have to get an attorney, and that attorney has to know these rules and has to abide by them. And so this absolutely matters when you're talking about law, because it's a talk about the true trickle down effect that goes from the Supreme Court to our federal judges, to our states, to our attorneys, to our, you know, so that what the decisions that they make greatly affect the way that marginalized communities are able to operate.
Right.
And I'll tell you something else too that really stunned me. And you know, like you said, people really do feel like they can say absolutely anything to people of color, to LGBTQ+, to women, to kids, to, I mean, there's like no holds barred. So this last week, Trump had made this comment on his social media pages about terminating the Constitution.
No.
You need to terminate the Constitution, right? Take the Constitution out. Bye-bye, Second Amendment. Sayonara, Second Amendment, you know, free speech, all that. Out. Bye. You know, that's all. Right to bear arms. What else is it? Improper search and seizure, like all of these different things out the window, right? But when he said that, when he said that word terminate, as a native, as a policy wonk, my ears just like ding, because it was like terminate. Now, there have been two races, two different groups that language has been used against: our Jewish brothers and sisters and us as Indians. Mm-hmm. And
those are so connected, because the genocide of American Indians was the roadmap for the Holocaust.
And that language, exterminate, terminate, termination, all of those things that it's like I said, and as a conspiracy theorist too, those as our native rights are being slowly rolled back and even stripped away. And the ways that the U.S. government back when they had the Indian Removal Act and all of these different things, even back then, we're still seeing the consequences of that all the way back then. We're still living those consequences from that. And to hear that verbiage and to know that what we were able to reorganize in the 70s under President Nixon, that was only 50 years ago. So what we Indians only got like 50 good years where we could actually kind of try to govern ourselves and try to regain some of that was stripped from us. And so how would that work if Congress did decide, you know what, we're going to go ahead and we're just going to do away with the American Indian designation. Nobody's an Indian now.
Right. Right. And I think that many tribal members, many American Indians, and that's what we're called under federal law, is American Indians, is the idea of the sovereignty of the tribes, that's who makes us who we are, is the sovereignty that was recognized by the founding fathers in the Constitution. They recognized that they had to deal with us separately. Even though they called us merciless savages, they still recognized that they had to deal with us separately. And that idea of that sovereignty still exists today. And it was better recognized and better explained in through some Supreme Court cases from Justice Marshall in the 1830s. And it's those cases, those three cases called the Marshall Trilogy, that took those words from the Constitution and explained what it means for tribes to be sovereign. And it's those words in the Constitution, it's those cases that give tribes the right to act as sovereign nations within the United States. Okay, so it was those cases, and we've got a very interesting Supreme Court right now. And with case law like that, we follow case law when there's not a legislative law out there, when the legislature hasn't set out law. So if Congress were to initiate some type of legislation that says that this is what we define American Indians as, and that definition can be all sorts of things if Congress legislates it. Now, we've got 500 tribes in the United States, and those 500 tribes all talk to their legislators to explain why we need to be sovereign, what we bring to the United States, what we provide to our individual tribal members, and how it's in the best interest of the United States that these tribes have sovereignty and are able to act as sovereign nations within the United States. That's that balance that, you know, is that exists right now. I think you have some very valid concerns about where we are in the United States right now. We're at a point where we have the predominant group who has had power in the United States since its founding, And as we move towards a more multicultural land, nation, we're going to see more and more groups who are trying to grasp that power and be able to pass laws that that protect people of color, protect women, protect LGBTQ. And we have people in power who don't want to see that happen. So I think you're right to be concerned about that.
Well, and it's like I said, that whole, the language, that's, I think that's one of the things that really, because when you, I mean, as an attorney, you know, like just that one little word from must to shall, from might, from, you know, all of these different things, all of these little things that people, oh, well, yeah, let's terminate the Constitution. And a lot of groups wouldn't even correlate that word, right? Just that word. Mm-hmm. Just that word, when I heard that, I was like, if he gets elected again with the unfriendliest government Oklahoma Indians have endured since statehood, it's very alarming to see, and you could feel like the collective anxiety of natives on election day, especially when you're looking at the five tribes.
Yeah.
And how they're like, well, now we got to come to the table and try to survive this to what I personally would say is an angry politician who very much has fought the tribes in that first administration and is going to continue that. Mm-hmm. And to have the governor of the place we call Indian Country, the place we call the heart of Indian Country,
mm-hmm.
to have a person in that powerful position and a Supreme Court who is already looking at rolling back protections in Indian Country, like the Indian Child Welfare Act, like VAWA, Violence Against Women Act, all of these different things that have been able to lapse, or, you know, if they're rolling back. I mean, these are very real concerns, I say, on a very primitive level for us as American Indians.
I agree.
It's scary. And so let's talk about something that's a little bit more lighthearted with our last few minutes. And I want to talk about just things people say. Like, okay, so Herschel Walker, right? Herschel Walker just lost his bid for the Senate. I think you know what I'm gonna say. So I guess this would be covered under the First Amendment, because I mean, that dude said some pretty outrageous. I would hear him say something and I would have to like stop and like turn my TV back and say, did he really say that? But some of the stuff just flat out isn't true. Okay, so the thing I really wanted to talk about was his flashing his badge. I'm a police officer too. So when does your First Amendment rights, when do those expire? Like, what's the limit to that? Because if you or I did that,
oh,
if you went to OIBA and held up a badge and said that you were a cop, they'd probably call your husband to say, I think she might be having some kind of mental breakdown.
Oh,
if I did that, they'd throw me in jail. flat out. I know, you impersonating an officer.
They will arrest you.
So where does that, like, I mean, and especially when you're a politician, right? You're trying to get elected.
Yeah. I think that poor Herschel, he was just at a point where, well, he was doing whatever he thought he needed to do in order to get elected. And he thought that that was just going to get him elected. With him and this whole situation, I think that that was just a bit of a carnival.
that's the nicest way I could put it.
Yeah, on some level, I feel sorry for him on some level, because he's just being used by a group of people who were okay. We're talking all about racism and stuff on this episode and everything. Is, Georgia is a state that does have a large Black population, and to me, it's a group of people, a party who, sees that, oh well, let's just find a Black person to run, and you take advantage of somebody who's. He was in football for a long time, and he probably took quite a bit of head injuries and such. And some of the stuff that he said was a little, a little off and everything. And to me, I felt like they were just taking advantage of him. Oh, let's put a Black man in there, and let's get a Black man who will agree to do this. And Herschel Walker, he's a very popular person in Georgia because he played football there, so he's a very likable person, very popular person amongst all people. He's a hero down there, so why wouldn't he do well down there? And I just feel like they took advantage of him because he's a Black man.
He was. Man, I that debate with Senator Dr. Reverend Raphael Warnock, that dude's accomplished now. And he sounds like Obama. Like I can hear a lot of President Obama's influence. And that just may be because he's a preacher too,
Yeah.
And has that charisma. Mm-hmm. that a lot of preachers have. But yeah, Herschel Walker, I do feel sorry for him too. I hope that he can mend some of his fences, and CTE is real, people, and we see that, and that's not a joke. Like that's something that very much affects a person's behavior and what they say and mm-hmm. how they operate. And yeah, I agree with you. That was just an ill-advised Senate campaign mm-hmm. brought on, and it was a strategic thing. And he wasn't the only person caught up in that. There was a lot of people who were caught up in a philosophy, yeah. in trying to further this philosophy, like we said, of this last brouhaha of a population that's no longer the majority, but still very much holds a lot of power.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Ask a Lawyer. It's a production of the Institute for Arts and Media. This half hour is sponsored by Oklahoma Indian Legal Services, serving Indian country in Oklahoma for 40 years. If you have any questions or want more information, or if you want to donate to OILS, you can go online and visit their website at oilsonline.org. They got a handy dandy donate button right there. And please support your nonprofits who are supporting your Indian communities. My guest today is Stephanie Hudson, Executive Director for Oklahoma Indian Legal Services. I'm Kelly J. Lewis with Talk Jive Radio. Have a great day, everyone.